There's a story being spun, a fantasy we're being sold, the notion that we can offset all the carbon we generate, that I can even get onto a flight and if I've ticked the right box and paid a few extra dollars when purchasing my ticket, my journey can be carbon neutral with net zero implications for the planet. Carbon offsets, net zero, carbon neutral. All of these catchphrases, these labels, they sound too good to be true. And that's because they are. Climate breakdown is the existential crisis of our age. In fact, it's been the most serious threat to life for at least a couple of generations. But now we've finally reached a point where a majority of governments and populations agree that this is a monumental issue. And if you've listened to politicians and corporate leaders, it seems they're pulling out all the stops, making ambitious pledges to slow down, if not halt, the destruction of our planet.
Europe will be the world's first climate neutral continent.
Net zero emissions.
Net zero by 2050.
Net zero.
لوصول الحياة الصفري.
实现碳中和.
Becoming a net zero emissions energy business by 2050.
2030 for our restaurants, no impact on the planet. We are completely net zero, we're completely neutral.
Those promises sound great, but when you pull apart the language, those key phrases and terms, things get a little murky.
It is important to remember that the language of carbon neutral or net zero emissions is incredibly misleading and it hides important contradictions.
Joanna Cabello is an environmental researcher who has spent more than a decade analysing climate policies and climate justice issues.
It's basically based on an idea that pollution can be compensated somewhere else by a project implemented mostly in the global south that should either avoid emissions or absorb emissions, and by doing so compensate the pollution from the polluter. Not because they are reducing, not because they are cutting their emissions, but because they are getting some credits that are doing the compensation, the cleaning up somewhere else. This logic of offsetting is what is misleading in all this language, because one would think, oh, companies are actually doing something about it. They are addressing the problem. And that is confusing for people in civil society that are trying to demand some action for climate change.
The reason climate scientists and activists seriously question carbon offsetting or carbon neutral programs is because they just do not do what they claim. They can't. Not when the fundamental premise on which these programs are based is so deeply flawed. Let's take an example. I'm travelling to Tasmania, where some of these programs are based, and I'm flying with Qantas, Australia's largest airline company, which also happens to run one of the largest offsetting programs of any airline in the world, called Fly Carbon Neutral.
If you as a passenger want to fly carbon neutral today, the best way is to voluntarily carbon offset your flights.
It's an enticing idea. When I buy my ticket, the calculation is made by the airline for my contribution to the amount of fuel used for my journey and therefore emissions released. And I pay an extra fee. In this case, just over $5. That money is then given to a number of other companies for use on carbon offsetting projects. Here are the ones that Qantas promotes. Qantas, on my behalf, has basically bought a carbon credit, permission to keep emitting on the basis that trees or renewable energy can offset pollution. One credit represents one tonne of carbon emissions. The math looks simple. One negative versus one positive equals what's called net zero.
But what you're saying, Joanna, is that equation doesn't really work.
So it is really important that we understand that there are two very different types of carbon. and this is barely talked about, but it's fundamental. So we have fossil carbon, these deposits that are locked underground for millions and millions of years. And then you have the biological carbon, which is this more dynamic carbon that flows around trees, vegetation, oceans, and it's dynamic. It changes, it goes from one to the other. But what is fundamental in the climate crisis is that the unlocking of fossil carbon deposits that took millions of years to be created are being burned in the shape of petroleum, gas, or coal in a massive scale and in a short period of time. And that creates an impossible imbalance for the Earth's capacity to deal with it, to absorb it, to regulate it. If we don't stop burning petroleum, oil, and gas, we are not addressing the problem. And offsets is a way to not talk about this.
There's really no such thing as a carbon offset, if you really look at it. It's made up.
Tom Goldtooth is a climate justice activist and executive director of the Indigenous Environmental Network.
There is no such thing as offsetting pollution by planting a tree. Even the scientists agree with this. You can't swap carbon that's been part of the combustion process of fossil fuels for above ground carbon in the biosphere. They're separate entities, but the market system doesn't differentiate that. They package it up together. So we're being scammed. It's when there's really no offset. It's just a way of business people to make money and to look good on paper.
So it doesn't matter for the offset scheme where this molecule is coming from, when was it done, or how long it was in the atmosphere. What it matters is the polluter has an accounting sheet, some numbers, where it says how many molecules they are emitting. And the offset project on the other side has also an accounting sheet where they say how many CO2 molecules they are absorbing or reducing or avoiding to emit. And therefore, this trading can happen.
Business in the net zero industry is booming. Amazon, Unilever, Disney, Google, Cemex, and Shell are some of the largest companies using offset programs to reach their sustainability goals.
Google is the first major company to eliminate our entire carbon legacy.
كنا أول بطولة محايدة للكربون.
The first net zero CO2 concrete.
The world's first certified carbon neutral commercial vehicle engine oil.
These companies and the people managing their offset programs sound really convinced about the value of their campaigns.
We are going to keep improving, and while we do that, we are also going to offset our remaining emissions.
From today, we are offsetting all the carbon emissions from our flight.
With any remaining emissions that you cannot eliminate with real change, you are agreeing to do offsets.
Now, if by this point you think the whole carbon offset net zero obsession is an elaborate ruse created by big corporations as a distraction and diversion tactic, well, you wouldn't be completely wrong. Big business, especially big oil, has played a significant role in lobbying for and developing carbon trading markets. However, there's been other key players that have been instrumental in the process, including the United Nations and a whole bunch of governments.
In fact, the very idea of emissions trading, of turning carbon into a commodity, was one of the highlights of the 1997 Kyoto Protocol, which was a milestone international treaty brokered by the UN to deal with the climate crisis.
From now on, industrialized countries that are party to the protocol have a clear obligation to reduce emissions. To do so, they can use the market to trade a new commodity, carbon.
Under the Kyoto Protocol, signatory governments would participate in a system called cap and trade. The first half of this process, the negotiation of carbon caps, would place limits on emissions from countries and big corporations. However, if they couldn't stay within their specified carbon emissions limits, then they still had an out. And that's where the trade part of the program would kick in. Corporations could simply buy a carbon credit from another emitter who may have fallen below their threshold of emissions, or from one of a number of other offsetting initiatives. In short, they could pick up a permit to continue emitting carbon.
The polluting corporations can buy, sell, bank, and trade these permits that are also called allowances. So when the price is low, they scoop them up, they buy them up, and bank them for later use when prices go up. So if these permits aren't enough, the polluters can purchase more carbon offsets from other sources.
With offsets, it has been actually a very cheap way for industrialized countries and companies to get off the hook, to have no responsibility or accountability, real accountability for their pollution or for their destruction, and to do no structural change.
Advocates of the Kyoto Protocol would argue that the United Nations did create a scheme to encourage structural change, the Clean Development Mechanism, or CDM. Set up in 2001, it was the world's first, and so far largest, carbon offset scheme. Countries with high emissions, like Canada, Japan, and Australia, could help achieve their own Kyoto targets by purchasing credits linked to carbon reduction programs in countries like China, India, and Brazil, which needed to keep national economic development on track, but had committed to do so without generating the volume of emissions rich countries produced when they were growing their economies. So, for example, if a power plant in Australia needed to shave 10% off its emissions, it could buy offsets from a solar power project in India. The power plant there might initially have been coal-fueled, but the sale of carbon credits could help cover the higher costs of developing solar power. The gap in emissions between the hypothetical coal plant and the actual solar farm would constitute the unemitted carbon that could now be sold as units of certified emissions reductions, basically permission slips to allow polluting entities to put out the carbon that was supposedly being withheld from the atmosphere.
The CDM was extremely popular in its heyday. More than 8,000 projects in 111 countries have registered with the scheme, which has handed out more than 2 billion carbon credits, representing a claim of more than 2 billion tonnes of carbon dioxide reduction or avoidance. The UN says the CDM has also funded more than $90 billion worth of renewable energy investment in developing countries. However, the program has been mired in complexity and controversy.
It has been widely researched that the Clean Development Mechanism brought about incredible amount of injustices on the ground. So we see, for example, hydroelectric dams are being said to produce clean energy. It's another misleading claim because it is in fact not clean at all. We have the energy production that is produced by water, but there is a whole infrastructure that was built on sometimes a forest or another river ecosystem, and the energy that is produced there is usually, most of the times, not going to be delivered to the communities around that are most of the times without access to energy. It's going to be most of the times for mining industry that are nearby that need the energy in order to keep extracting. So we see how the design of the scheme is not really taking consideration of the social aspects, of the environmental aspects, but is only considering the accounting sheets.
The CDM wasn't the only program of its kind. 10 years after the Kyoto Protocol in 2007, another UN-backed program came into being. The title made the mission pretty clear: reducing emissions from deforestation and forest degradation. In short form, RED. It tackled head-on one of the most urgent problems facing those working on the climate crisis: the rapid degradation of vital forests on Earth. The RED plan was quite ingenious in its simplicity. Developing countries would basically be paid not to cut down trees.
So I participate once and never more.
Britaldo Suarez Filho is a deforestation modeling expert in Brazil.
I was invited as part of a scientific committee for the first RED project in Brazil in the Amazon forest. Me together with several scientists. And then in the end, I found that was not really a scientific project, but a project to sell carbon credits.
What elements of your work were included in the RED program?
We were pioneers in developing the modeling for simulating deforestation, and they borrowed those methods to develop this delusional RED baseline. So it doesn't matter the technical details if the methods are unsound.
The methods Britaldo refers to is basically the maths. It begins with an estimation of how much deforestation could be expected in an area if the financial incentives from RED didn't exist. Unsurprisingly, the more deforestation you anticipate, the more carbon credits you generate, and the more money you can make. The whole system is very vulnerable to being gamed. So to try and add legitimacy by predicting deforestation more accurately, some RED projects employed a piece of free software developed by Britaldo called Ginamica Ego. program forecasts land use changes over time and was designed to measure the specific impact of policy decisions on forested areas, for example, measuring the potential impact of expanding cattle and soy industries in the Amazon basin. But as Brataldo points out, models are used to avert an undesirable outcome and cannot be used to predict the future.
We have a disclaimer that we don't support applying spatial models to set up baselines because deforestation depends much more on the national political context. So if you say, I'm going to protect this region, the difference is very small because all the drivers of deforestation are really controlled by the political signal that the government passes.
On paper, it makes sense to make forest conservation as lucrative as forest destruction is, given that just making deforestation illegal with serious penalties doesn't seem to have worked anywhere. State corruption, corporate lobbying, vested political and business interests have all meant that outlawing deforestation has minimal impact. It's virtually pointless.
RED has not been able to develop a market for carbon credits that is robust and actually truly incentivizes forest protection. All of this means that deforestation is on the rise. Just take a look at the stats from Brazil alone. New satellite data from Brazil's National Institute for Space Research shows that more than 3,980 square kilometres of the Amazon, an area 2.5 times the size of Bangkok, was cleared in the first 6 months of 2022. That's an increase of 10.6% from the previous year and the highest figure since 2015, when the Institute began this type of monitoring. This grim story is being repeated around the world in places like the Congo and Peru. Tom Goldtooth has been a long-time critic of carbon offsetting in general and programs like RED in particular. In 2010, he was blocked from entering the COP16 conference centre the day after he publicly criticised the UN process for carbon trading and RED.
Expanding carbon offsets have real and damaging impacts on Indigenous peoples and local communities. Our organization and many other networks and myself was really a major speaker about this. We had little stickers with red on it with the black line through it, no red. I noticed that as I was going out to exit the UN meeting, as I swiped my badge, the computer screen had a red line through my face. We're viewed as troublemakers, you could say, but we're really looking for real solutions. That's what we're doing.
Criticism of how RED programs are executed are not misplaced. In 2015, a French study into 120 RED projects across Latin America, East Africa, and Asia found that nearly 40% overlapped with existing protected lands like national parks. Many had failed the additionality criteria, and the authors of the study concluded that RED had been reduced to simply a logo to attract financing. Then there's the 2018 findings out of Norway, by far the most generous supporter of RED, while simultaneously being a major exporter of oil and natural gas. Norway's Office of the Auditor General found that despite a decade's work and $3 billion in funding, results from RED projects were delayed and uncertain, especially since there was considerable risk of what's called leakage, which is basically when protecting one patch of land leads to deforestation elsewhere. There's also the issue of permanence. In order for trees to capture emissions, those trees need to be around for a long time, centuries, not years. But because of climate change, storing carbon in trees has become increasingly unstable. Drought, fire, and flood will see many of the offset projects created today destroyed in the coming decades.
Finally, there's a big issue with land. There simply isn't enough of it on Earth to soak up the sheer amount of corporate carbon emissions.
A 2021 Oxfam report estimates that the amount of land required to meet the world's net zero targets could amount to 5 times the size of India. That's more than the entire area of farmland on the planet.
Much of it, whatever available land there is, rightfully belongs to Indigenous and other local peoples. In many cases, they have not been properly consulted, and their rights to their traditional territory are simply ignored. With the system so full of holes, all RED has done is create a new market for climate profiteers.
Now, after years of having those schemes in place and running, we see how flawed they are and how many projects that have been certified actually have a lot of conflicts on the ground and have a lot of irregularities. So there is problems from the technical point of view or from the social aspect of the project, but nevertheless, these certifiers are certifying a lot of these projects because it's a business. Who is regulating the regulators?
It's like a stock market. You buy a stock from a company and then you can resell to somebody else. And this person can resell to another one. And so it goes on. So the market can become a monster itself and take its own path. Because, you know, the final goal of the market is to make profit, not really to mitigate climate change.
The problems with RED just kept piling up. Even the UN eventually couldn't dismiss the issues. At COP25 in 2019, changes were made. RED was rebranded. It was now part of a series of schemes that are broadly called nature-based solutions. Among the many entities promoting versions of this phrase at the UN climate meeting was a group of private corporations, including BP, Shell, Aramco, and Chevron. Together with a number of other big corporations, they call themselves the International Emissions Trading Association, or IETA. Through their Markets for Natural Climate Solutions, they say they will use nature in its entirety to both remove greenhouse gases and to manage emissions. Assessing the effectiveness of so-called nature-based solutions is not particularly challenging. All of the initiatives, whether associated with protecting and restoring forests, soils, wetlands, or marine environments, replicate and in fact magnify the fundamental flaw present in the Clean Development Mechanism and RED, that it is a compensation-based system. Carbon emissions are not reduced. Instead, they are supposedly offset through complex and opaque emissions trading markets, enabling companies to say that they are carbon neutral, even though they are still burning fossil fuels.
Any concept of trading air in a colonial market system treats it as a property right. So the question that is often resolved in these negotiations is the corporation ending up owning the property of the carbon in the trees.
This idea, which is the complete neoliberalization of the climate debate, where all nature should become a service provider to humans, is very deep, alarming threat to forest peoples. Because kind of each of these claims, there is land that is being enclosed for doing an offset project. So what we call this, that there is a conservation industry nowadays.
With governments and corporations saying offsets are a key part of the solution, average consumers, keen not to contribute further to the degradation of our planet, have been persuaded to take part in the charade. There are voluntary programs being sold to offset everything from household emissions to car emissions, and something called YepU, a website that enables individuals to offset their own breath for $27 a year.
Carbon market scenarios are being utilized to allow civil society to relieve their guilt. It's a diversion technique, you know, used by carbon traders to distract the public from the important action of keeping oil, gas, and coal in the ground. That's bottom line.
What we see in all these years of UN negotiations and climate debates is that pollution is increasing. Even though so many schemes have been put in place, we need to think of offsets as the scheme that is actually making the problem worse, not at all making it better. So there is no good projects or bad projects. So all these certifications, it just kind of masks the criticism that is underneath.
After 25 plus years of fighting the carbon markets, I think we can reasonably claim that carbon trading, offsets, carbon pricing, and all of the iterations of RED Plus, nature-based solutions, net zero emissions targets, it's all the same thing. It is the biggest distraction and scam on Mother Earth, on the planet.
There's a story being spun, a lie we're being told. It's the notion that we can offset all the carbon we generate. The only way to reduce carbon pollution is to reduce carbon emissions, to actually cut fossil fuel extraction and usage. All of the other stuff, tree planting, protecting and restoring ecosystems, investing in renewable energy, all of that's great and very much needed. But without reducing our structural demand for fossil fuels, we are in effect not just doing nothing, we're making things worse.
offsets are making us believe that something is being done when actually what is being done is worsening the problem. It's allowing the drivers to go and expand, to even claim that it's green, that it's sustainable. So instead of talking about fossil fuels, we are talking about CO2 molecules. And while doing so, it actually conceals all the violence and the abuse of power that the fossil fuel industry is built upon.
Thanks so much for watching episode 1 of All How the Planet. This is a series looking at the political, economic, and social barriers to meaningful action on climate change. We'll be releasing more episodes in the coming weeks, so if you want to find them on social media, you can easily use the hashtag All Hail the Planet. Otherwise, search for All Hail on aljazeera.com.